All right, can you hear me? Great, let's go ahead and get started. Hello and welcome to Thursday. I'm Mark Wall. I'm a program manager for the Active Directory organization. And what I'm going to be talking about today is provisioning and federation of users from Azure Active Directory out into software as a service applications. Now, we've had a number of talks already so far this week, you know, overview of Azure, Azure Active Directory, how do you get your users into Azure Active Directory from your on-premise environment. You may have heard, you know, Nasos or other presenters from the engineering team talking about DirSync and federation to Azure AD. Now what we're going to be covering is what can you do with those identities once they're in your Azure Active Directory environment? What are all the different capabilities that Azure Active Directory provides to connect to software as a service applications? We're going to talk about some of the different capabilities that we provide for integration with, you know, well-known SaaS applications. And then at the end, if we have some time, we'll do a little troubleshooting and we'll walk through how you can go and help diagnose what happens if there's a problem. You try to set this up and it's not working for some reason. Here's where you can get the information you need in order to resolve this yourself or get the information that support will need to help you out if you have a problem integrating apps. So, you've probably heard this many times at the keynote, but to review, what we do with Azure Active Directory is provide not really the same kind of directory functions that a traditional on-premises directory server like Active Directory has done, like group policy or domain join. Rather, Azure Active Directory provides services for the new wave of applications, predominantly cloud-hosted applications, applications that need to have consistent user identities and consistent user sign-in experiences. So what we focus on is enabling both application developers to very easily build applications running on-premises, running in data centers, whether on Azure or other hosting providers, to be able to use Azure Active Directory as a simple way of gaining access to user identities from many different organizations that allow that application, and so that the application developer does not need to build yet another sign-in experience, yet another password change, password reset experience. What we also provide in Azure Active Directory are features for IT, for the organization to use those identities to project out to other applications, like we'll see throughout most of the deck today, the Microsoft and third-party applications. And finally, built on top of what I've just been talking about, the Azure Active Directory capabilities that are free, we also have Azure Active Directory Premium, which provides additional capabilities, again, targeting an IT scenario for end-user self-service, self-service password reset, being able to delegate group management, being able to provide richer capabilities for organizations that want to not only manage identities in the cloud, but also provide more self-service capabilities for their end users to manage their own identities in the cloud. And Azure Active Directory Premium also includes a number of other features which you've heard about, on-premises identity management and other capabilities. It's also aligned with the work we're doing with Intune, with other teams like Rights Management Service as part of broader offerings for Microsoft. Now, most of what I'm going to be talking about today is in the basic Azure Active Directory free platform. So you can go get an Azure subscription if you don't already have one and start doing this. If I mention a feature that's part of Azure Active Directory Premium, I'll highlight it so you know which features are premium. But apart from those, everything you'll see today, you can go get an Azure subscription, start using, and try it out for yourself. So you've probably seen this slide a couple times this week. Basically, what I'm going to be focusing on is how do we use the identities that were being put into Azure Active Directory. You can either go to Azure Active Directory and create a user, or you can say, I already have my users. They're in an Active Directory environment. I can use DirSync to do that. Or if they're already in Porphyry Identity Manager, I can bring those in. We also have in preview what you may have heard about if you went by our booth. We have Azure Active Directory Sync, which provides the way to connect other directories, other databases from on-premises into Azure Active Directory. Once those identities are there, users can authenticate. They can authenticate natively to Azure Active Directory, or you can use ADFS or Ping Federate in order to relay the authentication request back to your on-premises environment. Once the user has been authenticated, where can they go? That's the point of this talk. They can go to the Microsoft apps and go to the non-Microsoft apps. So what natively integrates with Azure Active Directory beyond, well, Azure? Microsoft Online Services, so Office 365, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online, all of these applications, of course, use Azure Active Directory. For many of you, that's probably your first exposure to identity in Azure Active Directory in the cloud is when you started using Exchange Online or SharePoint Online. You then found when you went over to Azure that, in fact, you can do more with those identities. So if you already are using Office 365 as a shared service in the cloud, you have an Azure Active Directory, you just may not have been to its portal before. Intune, Dynamics CRM Online, and other services from Microsoft also use Azure Active Directory. And what we're going to be covering today is the non-Microsoft apps. Now, how do you interact with Azure Active Directory? Here's the kind of things I'm going to walk through so that if you haven't seen all of these, we'll have a level set for all the different integration points we have. Probably many of you who've used Azure before will have seen the Azure Management Portal. That's the primary place where you can connect users to third-party applications. If you already used Office 365, if you used, say, Exchange Online or SharePoint Online, you'd have seen the users in a portal, but you wouldn't have seen any other applications beyond the Office 365 applications. So here you'll be able to see all the same users and the third-party applications and get some more reports around what those users are doing. We also have PowerShell interfaces. If you've been to MSDN or TechNet, seen on the documentation, you can download a set of PowerShell commandlets that do a lot of the same kind of user and group management operations. So if you say, well, I don't want to go to the portal and type in all my users, and I'm not big enough to have an on-premises directory, maybe I only have 100 users, you can use a PowerShell script and say, just go and put these 50 or 100 users into the directory, or change their passwords, put them in groups, take them out of groups, license them for applications. If you say, but really, I'm on a Mac, or I'm on some crazy platform. I don't even have PowerShell, and I don't like the web because I'm still living back in the 90s. Well, we also have APIs as well. So we have APIs for going into the directory. And so, again, user creation, putting users in group, checking group membership, you can do that over the network from many different programming languages, you know, C#, Java, different APIs we'll talk about. Now, everything we've covered up to this point has been IT-facing experiences. We also have an end-user experience I'll show called the Access Panel. The Access Panel is where we can surface to an end-user, to an information worker, all the different applications that they have access to in their environment, both the Microsoft and the non-Microsoft one. The Access Panel is also the home where we provide, if you are using Azure Active Directory Premium, the premium self-service capabilities, self-service password reset, or delegated group management. Those are also surfaced in the Access Panel. But even if you're not using Premium, the Access Panel is available for you to provide your end users with visibility over what apps they have and allow them to click on an app and get logged in automatically. We also have two features that are in preview. So I mentioned before DirSync. You're probably very familiar with that if you've used Office 365, because that brings users in from your Active Directory environment. If you need more capabilities than what DirSync provides, if you say, well, I want to filter, or I'm multi-forest, or I don't even have all the data that I need for these applications based on what Mark's going to tell me in Active Directory, I need to bring in data from my other enterprise directory or from a SQL database. Azure Active Directory Sync provides that. It's a free download. You can put that in, use that instead of DirSync, and populate from many other kinds of on-premises data sources your Azure Active Directory. And finally, the cloud application discovery. What we showed in the keynote at the beginning, I'll show this again so you can see more of kind of the IT pro view of it, allows you to get quick visibility into, well, what apps are being used in my organization so you can make sure you're managing the right apps. So let's start by going through a quick demo. Let me show you the different parts I was talking about so you can see how they fit together. So let's start with the basics, the Azure Management Portal. So here in the Azure Management Portal, if you go down to the Active Directory triangle pyramid shape, you'll see your directories. Here I have four of them. And then within my directory, of course, I have users. So if I had Office 365 or Exchange Online, I'd see exactly the same set of usernames in there. Now here, I've created these users in the cloud, but if you're using DirSync, then you'd be seeing your on-premises users listed here as well. And of course, groups, they're there. Now what you don't see in, say, the Office Exchange Online view, but you do see in the Azure Management Portal, are some of these other tabs. An application is the main one we're going to be covering today. What this lists are all the applications that have been integrated with Contoso's Azure Active Directory tenant. And this can be a mix of applications. So there's some Microsoft applications in this list, there's some applications that Contoso develops themselves, and there's third-party applications. So if you want to add an application or see which ones are there, go to your Azure portal, select your directory, and then click Add. And then you can go down two paths. If you're building your own application, you can go and add an app this way. Or you can add one of our, what we call our pre-integrated applications. And we have a fair number of those, and there are different categories. You can go search for a particular app and find it on the list. So these applications are what we're going to be covering today for the most part. But before I go into all that, I did want to show you briefly how we do our application integration. So we provide, through Azure Active Directory, the way for an application developer to connect their application to this organizational directory. And once it's connected, then users have a single sign-on experience. So let's show what that would look like in Visual Studio. I can go to Visual Studio if I'm using 2013 and easily build an application that's going to use that directory. So if you haven't done this before, if you want to build a Hello World that uses your cloud Azure Active Directory identities, it's pretty straightforward. File, new, create a project, and you're going to select, let's say, an ASP.NET web application. This is probably very familiar to you if you've used Visual Studio before. Here, let me just show you the one new thing. I'm building my web app. Here's what's new. If I select, say, building a model view controller, I can change how I want my application to authenticate users. And one of the things I can pick is organizational accounts. So if you're going to build an application, you say, I want my application to have this great single sign-on experience, and you're using Visual Studio already in your organization, go here, select your ASP.NET app, change to org accounts. And what you can do is say, I only have one organization, Contoso, and you put in your domain. Let's start with contosobuild.com today. And here you can pick what your application will be allowed to do with the directory contents. Now, if you built on-premises LDAP applications, you know that configuring this is basically done through LDAP and ACLs, and you had to go set it in the directory. Here, we give you a very simple choice. What's your application allowed to do? Just get single sign-on, just receive user identity, read data, so maybe the application needs to go back and read group memberships, or maybe this is an application that can write data. If I were to click OK right here, it makes sure I'm authenticated, that I'm allowed to add applications, and then this application would show up in that list of apps as well. And if I went in and started debugging this application, it'd send me back to Azure Active Directory for users to sign in. So we've eliminated a lot of the administrative overhead as well as programming overhead that you may have seen, you know, if you saw one of these talks 2 or 3 years ago about integrating through federation. We've also added some new interfaces beyond, change who I am, beyond the protocol support that we have in the past. What we're adding today is support for the new protocols, OAuth, OpenID Connect. Let me just show you briefly what that looks like. So when I build the application, it's going to go and, you know, create all the various federation support, put it all into the application environment, and once it's done, it'll set it up for the application to now show up in that list of apps. It's going to be using basically the SAML token at this point. If you've heard about things like OAuth and OpenID Connect, and you want to be saying, well, you know, SAML is so old school, it uses those strange XML angle braces, I don't like them because they're not JavaScript. I want to use the latest things. I want to use OpenID Connect. You can do that, and we have some blog posts out there. But let me just show you. You can switch over, and you can use OpenID Connect as well. So let's just show you where you could go get that. If you want to use OpenID Connect, we have packages for that. It's a NuGet, select include pre-release, and type in OpenID Connect. you should see we have packages here for the OpenID Connect protocol as well. So you can go and pick which way you want to integrate your application with Azure Active Directory. If you want to use SAML tokens, you can use SAML tokens. If you want to use OpenID Connect, you can use OpenID Connect. So that was a quick detour into the land of development. Now let's go back to the IT experience. So my application will be on this list here somewhere, I think at the end of application one, as well as all the other applications, so Yammer and other Microsoft and third-party apps. So this is what you see as the IT pro. Now what you see as the end user is the access panel. The access panel here, I'm still logged in as the administrator, but this view is visible even for someone who's not an admin, doesn't have an Azure subscription or an Office license. They can then see their applications. And if they click on an application, then they'll be signed in automatically. So here, if I click on Box, then it's going to go redirect my browser and open a new tab. Box is making sure I'm part of Contoso, and I'm going to be signed in over here, a little federation dance, into my Box account. And same thing here for other applications. Let's see Salesforce. So what we provide with the access panel is that single sign-on experience so that the users can go to one place, see all their applications. They can see the applications that the admin has configured for them here in the IT Pro view. And you can set up for an application how you want that application to basically authenticate users. So if we take an application like Box, you have choices for single sign-on. You can use federation, like what we just showed, in which the user doesn't need to have or even know about a password. They click on the Box tile on the access panel, and they're logged in the Box. Or you can do password-based single sign-on. That's available for almost all the applications. Password-based single sign-on, again, you have two choices. As an IT pro, you could set the password for the application for a user. So let's say you have a company-owned subscription, and you have one shared account, and you have five people who need that account, and your EULA with that application allows it. You can choose what password you want those users to have, put it in for that application for those users, and then those users, when they click on that application tile, will be signed in automatically with that password. Or you may have an application where you don't know the user's password. Maybe you want to put Facebook on that panel and say, I don't want to know people's Facebook passwords. I want them to pick whatever Facebook password they want. You can do that as well. You can say users can pick their own passwords. Now, for some of our applications beyond federation, we also provide automatic user provisioning. I'll show you which ones in a moment. Basically, for user provisioning, you can configure, if you turn this flag on, that Azure Active Directory is authoritative for putting users into your SaaS application, and when you delete them out of your Azure AD tenant, also taking them out of your SaaS applications as well. So this allows you to now very easily manage who has access to applications like Box or Salesforce or others through the Azure Management Portal. And then finally, your third step is assigning users access to an application. And again, we have two ways of doing that. I can individually assign users. So if I go to my list of users, I can see everyone in my Azure AD tenant, and I could pick someone like Satya and say, yep, Satya, I think he deserves one for Box, and Sean Bishop, yeah, he did a good presentation. He can have one as well. Now, if I'm using Azure Active Directory Premium, then I have an additional option here. I can also use groups. So with the Premium, I could also pick a group of, say, all administrators, and I say I could want to give everyone in the administrators group access to an application like Box, so that when someone transitions into that group, you know, maybe you're replicating that group from on-prem and you run a provisioning workflow or self-service, the user goes into the group, then Box shows up on the access panel. And of course, when they leave that group, Box disappears off the access panel. And you've connected Azure Active Directory to Box for provisioning and deprovisioning. Then as the user joins, goes into the group, leaves the group, Azure AD will automatically know to give that user an account in Box or take them back out again. So this then allows you to have a very simple way of establishing who has access to these SaaS applications and what users see on their access panel. Now, if your question is, wow, you've got a lot of applications on this list. Why did you pick those? One thing that we just put out in preview and we showed in the keynote is Cloud Application Discovery. So if I go to appdiscovery.azure.com, already signed in, What this will do is allow you to collect data from your on-premises environment around what applications are being used and send that application use data to Azure Active Directory. How we do that is with agents. The agent that's in preview today is an agent that runs basically on the end user computer. So if you have, say, a number of domain joined computers and you're using something like SCCM to push out software to that, you can download the agent, which comes as a little zip file, a certificate to authenticate itself and an agent. And that agent will then push data from each client computer to Azure Active Directory and show up on this list. Now, I don't have the agent here running on this laptop, but I do have another tenant we set up earlier, so you can see what the view would look like. Once that agent's been running, it will collect application use data and then provide this view over what applications are being used, so you can see what your top apps are in your environment. This will then make sure that you're managing access to the correct applications. So in this case, we're simulating an organization here where Office is the top apps, followed by DocuSign, Dynamics, and so on. And you can get some basic graph information about, you know, how much traffic, how many requests, how many different users are interacting with these apps. So you can get a sense for which apps really are worthwhile for you to manage access to. And once you've done that, then you can, of course, go back into the Azure Management Portal, select to add one of those applications if it wasn't already on your list, bring it in, and now start assigning users access to this. So this gives you the ability to get visibility into what applications are being used in your environment, and then to be able to better manage that. You can then tell users, hey, you can get a single view of all the apps. And with that, you also have reports then of which users are using those. So I have views, not only the views that we showed in the keynote, over how users are signing in, and we can warn you if there's, for example, users whose machines have been infected or are part of a botnet or are logging in from multiple regions, but also things around which of these applications are actually being used now that I've integrated them. So I can go through and, you know, particular an application, see how many people are using it. No one's used Agile then. Guess we just added it. Or in summary, what are my top applications being used? So again, it's all about getting you more data around application use. Through Cloud App Discovery, you can see apps that are being used from any computer where the agent is running. And through these reports, you can also get views on how many people are using the application in the access panel. You can also see a view on a particular user themselves. So if I go pick a user like the admin, I can see some information about them, what they're doing, where they are, even their devices and so on. So more visibility over where users are coming from, where they're going to, what applications, what devices. So now that we've covered an overview of what's available through Azure Active Directory, both in the management portal, in the application discovery, and in the end user view, now let's go back to the presentation. We'll walk through in more detail how you would set up provisioning single sign-on to these applications, and then we'll go back here to the demo and we'll try it out and see what happens underneath the covers. We can open it up, look at some of the traffic patterns, see what happens if there's, say, a failure or a problem that occurs. So these are some of the endpoints we were looking at before. The ones on the left are all about how we bring data into Azure Active Directory from, say, your on-premises environment, you know, synchronizing data in. And then how do we have users authenticate to Azure Active Directory? Of course, they could authenticate to your Azure Active Directory environment natively with username and password. You could be dir-syncing in a password hash, or you can federate from on-premises. From ADFS, we also have a list of other identity providers that are supported beyond ADFS. You can pick Ping Federate, you can pick others. There's a list on our website. And then, as I mentioned, we have administration through the Azure Management Portal through PowerShell. Now, on the right-hand side, we have how do we then get data out of Azure Active Directory? One way is through provisioning. What I showed before with Box, as my example in the Azure Management Portal, is you could configure both how users authenticate to Box, either via federation or password, and also that you want to have Azure Active Directory automatically provision users into an application like Box. Now, today, there is no agreed-upon standard API for how to provision users into third-party applications. We're working on one, as well as many, many other people in the industry using protocols like SCIM, which you may have heard of. But today, if you went out and you surveyed, say, a few hundred SaaS applications, and you asked how many of them support SCIM, it's basically none, certainly in production. Though a lot of people are trying it out. So what do we do? Well, we do what we always do because we're identity management team is we adapt. We build provisioning to whatever those APIs are that are out there that support user provisioning. And because we're doing adaptation, there's going to be some nuances we'll talk about that you need to keep in mind if you're going to connect your Azure AD to one of these environments. We also do federation, what I talked about before. SAML today, it's supported, it's live in production, and OpenID is in preview, OpenID Connect, sorry. So if you want to be on the cutting edge, you can download the packages I showed earlier in Visual Studio, read up on Vittorio's blog, and find out more information about how to try out some of our new protocol work for federation. And then finally, the Graph API. So before, when I was adding that application using Visual Studio, I showed that you had a choice. You could either say, all my app needs to do is authenticate users and nothing more. Or you could say, I want my application to also be able to read data from the directory or possibly write data. And that's through the Graph API. So as part of then adding that application, I could choose what level of writes an application has. Can it read or can it write data from my directory? And we have SDKs for the Graph API, not only for Visual Studio and C#, but for other non-.NET platforms as well, like Java, PHP, and so on. So how do we go about doing the application integration? So we picked a set of applications based on feedback from organizations like your own and from many others that we deal with to go ahead and do the integration work. Box, Dropbox, I'll show a list in a moment. And through that, Azure Active Directory takes care of automatically creating the user. And if we make changes to that user, either on-prem and dirt sync them into Azure AD or in Azure AD itself, let's say user's name changes, Azure Active Directory will then be responsible for taking that change and sending it to the SaaS application. And of course, if you disable or delete the user, those changes flow as well. Now, let's say you have your own application, or you're building the hot new app. You say, I need to have this provisioning. I need it now, and I don't want to wait for Microsoft to go and do this, can I get a lot of these same benefits? Yes. So Graph API allows you to retrieve a lot more information than what we even provision out to SaaS applications. So today we provision users, and just enough user identity to support single sign-on. But if you say, oh, but my application would be so much better if I could see groups, or if I could kind of follow links like who people's managers are, get more information about the user than just the federation attributes. Can I do that? Yes, through Graph you can do that. You can retrieve objects. You can retrieve changes. So we have a Graph property called differential query. So let's say you have your own little SQL database that's a copy of all the users and say, you know, I already built my app. It has its own database. I've got all my users in the app. I just need to know if something's changed in Azure Active Directory, like, you know, have anyone been added lately or anyone deleted lately? So we have an API call as part of a graph called diffquery. You can go back to Azure AD and say, what's changed since the last time I asked you? Oh, we got 10 new users, 5 deletes, 20 renames, and so on. So you can now say, great, I can use that to update my local database. You could also extend the schema. So this is something we just turned on relatively recently. Let's say you have your application. Your application, yeah, we kind of went and built our own database. We kind of did our own thing. We have our own copy of the users. We have our own key attribute that we use to identify the users. Can we put that keying attribute in Azure AD so that I can go back and check which user this is? Yeah, you can go to Azure Active Directory as an application developer, extend the schema and say, I want to store an additional attribute or 5 or 10 attributes on each user so that then when you go back and you're reading the directory, you can see your own attributes. And then to federation. So what do we support in SAML? The basics. Authentication for users signing into apps. Also single logout. So if you're building an application and your application wants to get notified when users log out of Microsoft Online Services, we also implement the logout pattern as well. And of course, federation metadata. We have docs on MSDN. Similarly for OpenID Connect, which is in preview, there's documentation on the blogs on MSDN for how you can get started with OpenID Connect to try out some of our new federation capabilities as well. They're not as rich today in OpenID Connect as what you have in SAML. SAML's a little bit more mature because it's been out there longer. But it's also changing very rapidly. We have a lot of new things that we're going to be bringing in over the next few months. So keep an eye on the OpenID Connect as it evolves over the summer, and there'll be a lot of new features going in there. Now that we covered provisioning through the Graph API, we also covered user authentication. Now let's talk about authorization. How do we decide in Azure Active Directory and in your applications what users can do once they've been authenticated? To the Microsoft Online Services, so Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, it's done through licensing. There's a PowerShell commandlet, or you can do it through the portal, that it says, this user has a license. And if you use Exchange Online, you know what happens. When you license a user, that gives them a mailbox. If you de-license the user, they can't read their mail anymore. Similarly for SharePoint, gives them access. That's how you manage for online services. Now, if you're building your own application on premises, what would you do? Traditional way for application developers is to use groups. So if you were building an application with on-premises Active Directory, you'd probably say, all right, user's been authenticated. I could say, look inside the Kerberos token, see what groups this user's a member of. Or go back via LDAP and query Active Directory and find out, for the on-premises, what groups is this a member of. Same pattern here. If you're building a cloud application and you want to say, I like the idea of using groups for authentication, it's very familiar to my developers. Can I do that through the web as well? Yes. You can use Azure Active Directory groups for authorization control. We have some examples on that from SDN that show you how you can retrieve group memberships, including transitive memberships, from the directory, and then see when a user authenticates, are they in a group that's relevant to your application? And if so, use that to control access to your apps. Now, that's about building applications for your own environment. Let's say you want to build a multi-tenant application. Let's say you want to be like Box or Salesforce and build an app that anyone in the world can gain access to. The model we have for that is called consent. And we have documentation on how you go through and add consent to your application to make it multi-tenant. And what will happen when you have consent is anyone can go to that list of applications in the Azure Manager portal I showed earlier. And some of those applications, Ariette, Cloud Broker, a few others, are consent-based applications. When you go click on that application, it says, thank you for picking, I'll just name one, Ariette. Sign up now for Ariette. And when you say sign up for Ariette, a little OAuth flow will pop up saying, would you like to allow Ariette to have access to your organization's data for a single sign-on? And you can say yes, and if so, then that application is now consented to read data from your organization and can then use that for providing their SaaS application. Or you can cancel out and won't have access. So you've seen this before. If you've ever used like Facebook apps or something, you know about consenting as an individual. We have that same consent model if you're building a multi-tenant application for the directory. The final way in which we do authorization in the Azure Active Directory environment is for our SaaS applications. So if you have a third-party SaaS like Box or Dropbox and so on, basically that application knows its own authorization model. We don't know it. We don't know how Box internally does authorization because that's their world. But what we can control and give you visibility as IT pros in Azure Active Directory is who can gain access by being provisioned into Box. So the way in which we do authorization today through Azure Active Directory is by the group model we showed earlier, or the individuals. You can assign which users should be provisioned into the application, and when they're provisioned, they'll show up on the access panel, and there'll be a corresponding account in the SaaS application for them to log into. I'll show you some more in a moment how to troubleshoot when that goes wrong, if there's a mismatch. Now let's talk about what kinds of connectivity are available for applications. So we showed a list, I think there was 1,443 applications in the list today. I'm going to cover some of the applications that people ask for the most. We have different capabilities for some of these top applications. For the most of them, with one exception as of today, Workday, we have the automatic user provisioning and deprovisioning for these applications. So what we've done is Microsoft, our engineers, have gone and read the documentation on, say, Google's website or Box's website that says, how do you go and add a user to a tenant in Box or Google? And we've implemented the client side of that, if you will, in Azure Active Directory. So we'll take care of that user provisioning and deprovisioning if you turn that on for your tenant. We've also shown which ones are possible for federation. Now, this is a point in time. This is where we are at today. This is not saying that we're never going to do federation or never going to do provisioning for these apps, or this is the total list of apps. That's just where we are at the moment. Because we're continuing to evolve our federation work. You know, some of these weren't possible a couple months ago. We ran into some interoperability issues that we've been working through. So this list will continue to change and be updated. So keep it on the Azure Management Portal. If you have an application, like say Concur or DocuSign or so on, in your application list, then as we add new features, more controls will show up on that application so that then you can configure additional capabilities in the future. Broadly, what you'll see is that almost all the applications that are available in that list support the password-based single sign-on, where we store the user's password in Azure Active Directory for that SaaS app. And for many of these top applications, we have the federated single sign-on. Not all of them today, but we're working on that. We're collaborating with many of these, as well as evolving the state-of-the-art through SAML and OpenID Connect in order to make sure we get more interoperability in the future. There's a question, I think, over there. So there's a question about password SSO. Does that require dir sync with password hash sync? No, it does not. So the password SSO from the access panel is a per app password that's only for the user logging into a particular SaaS application. So the way in which you think about the password SSO is separate from the password that the user might have for logging into, say, their on-premises Active Directory environment or their Azure Active Directory environment. It might be that they already have an account in Box or Facebook or something. It's like, I already have my password. I don't want to change that password. I want to keep using the password I already have. So you can maintain your existing password for that application for that user. So you don't need to do password hashing from on-prem because those passwords aren't used for third-party SaaS. We do not ever push an on-premises Active Directory password into Box or Citrix or Dropbox or any of these. They're entirely separate. So the question is, do users enter the password themselves? So yes, you have two choices. Either you can say, the users bring their own passwords. Maybe you're moving a department in. I'll get to your question in a second. Maybe you're moving a department in. The department used to be running their own Citrix GoToMeeting, and now you say, now I want to manage it as part of a broader IT initiative, but users already have their passwords. As IT, I don't want to know what those passwords are. They can keep doing it. Or you might say, we're going to do a new deployment of Dropbox or Business, and we want to do a limited rollout, so we're going to set some initial passwords for the users so that they go to the access panel, they can try it out, and IT will maintain those passwords. Either approach. Question over there. You noticed that there was a constraint that I hid by putting on the slide from the access panel. Good catch. If you ever want a career in law, that would be perfect, because you can catch these kind of details. So yes, the question was, we're talking here about federation from the access panel. What if I want to go to the application directly? I don't want to use the access panel. I want to go straight to the app and have login just work. Which ones are possible today? It's a subset of these. So Box works today. You can go straight to Box, and I can even show that in a moment. You go straight to Box, click on Contoso, and it'll go and do the redirect back, and it'll come back to Box with a token from Azure Active Directory. User can sign in for Box. For others on the list, some of those also work, and we can talk some more after one-on-one which ones. And for others, we don't have it today. And we know that we don't, and we are working on it. So Salesforce is one where we really want to get to it today. We're still dealing with some interoperability issues around SAML and Salesforce. We know it's an open issue, and we're going to resolve it. Today, we managed to get it work where you can go to the access panel as the end user, click on Salesforce, and be taken into Salesforce. What we want to do is allow the user to, say, go directly to Salesforce from a mobile app and have Salesforce go back to Azure Active Directory, pick up the token through SAML or OpenID Connect, and come back to Salesforce. That's certainly our intent and our goal, but that's not currently available today. So we're working on that, and when we have an update, we'll put it on the wiki that I'll show at the end when we do have that update in place. Another question.
Do you have this list published plus the other
So the question was, do we have this list published plus the identity providers for the other 1,400 apps? So what we have published today is the list of all the applications. We also, you can go to the application in the Azure Management Portal and see whether it supports just password SSO provisioning and deprovisioning. And then the question is, which ones support the access panel initiated versus going directly to the application? We currently have that on the wiki because that's changing more rapidly. And then once it stabilizes, once we're done with our development, then we'll move it from the wiki to the mainline MSDN documentation. And the wiki link, wiki link, not that other one, will be at the very end of the deck. So I'll put that as well. Question. So, great question. Will there be a plan in the future for single sign-on from Azure Active Directory to non-cloud applications? Yes. And in fact, there is a session yesterday by Shai Kariv, B327, and if you haven't, you should go back and watch the recording of that, in which he talked and even demonstrated how you could see in that list of applications not only the Microsoft and the apps you develop yourself and the SaaS apps, but also on-premises apps. And he showed an early view of something that's going to be coming into preview, where today I had those two choices, apps you're developing yourself or SaaS app. He will add a third choice, which is an existing application I might have, say, on-premise or in my private cloud environment, and will allow those applications to also show up on the access panel. Not in preview yet, but coming soon. Question over here. Yes, so the question was, can I use a single sign-on for Outlook and Link? Yes, you can. So in the access panel, I'll go back at the end when we go back to the demo. But yes, the first applications that we showed in the list of applications were Outlook and SharePoint. We don't have Link on the list yet, but Outlook and SharePoint are on the access panel. The reason Link's not on the access panel yet is for most of our customers today, Link is a rich client application, and we don't have rich client, native applications on the access panel. But it's the same sign-on experience. So if you've signed on already as an end user for any of those web applications, Link Online, SharePoint Online, OWA to Exchange Online, then once you've signed in as the end user and you go to myapps.microsoft.com, you'll be signed in automatically because it's the same identity. Yes, so the applications on the access panel, the question was, do they have to be web apps? Yes, today we put on the access panel the web applications. We don't currently put onto the access panel what we call the native applications or native clients. Is that coming? Not yet, but soon. Well, soon compared to other things that take a long time. The next thing that's going to be coming is going to be the on-premises application. So if we look at our stack rank, right now, our priority is obviously get this working, get the federation working for more of these scenarios, including going directly to the application, and then the on-premises apps, and then after that, additional kinds of applications beyond the traditional web app will kind of be next on the stack rank. Okay. Yes. Will we make this available for on-premises ID? Well, my weaselly answer for that would be, it's the same identity as in your on-premises identity, and it's the same authentication. So if users are already authenticating to on-premises identity, then they can see the applications in the access panel. And once we add, which will be coming in preview, the ability to see the on-premises applications as well, apps that are traditionally connected to, say, Active Directory natively on the access panel, then yes, the end users will effectively get the same view where they are the same identity as on-premises, the same way that they log in, already signing themselves in through something like ADFS, and being able to see the applications that you want to publish out on the internet. But it'll still be an Azure Active Directory hosted service. Okay, last question, move on. Yep. So the question was for Federation, for Box, when the user goes to Box or clicks on Box, no passwords are exchanged with Box. Instead, what we'll show is the authentication between your organization and Azure Active Directory, however you've configured it. So it could be you sign in with your Azure Microsoft Online Services password to Microsoft Online Services Azure Active Directory, or you may be going back to your on-premises environment with ADFS. However that's happened in the past, once the user has been authenticated, what Azure Active Directory sends to Box will be a federation token, which will not have a password. It'll simply have the user identity. And for this, Box will be configured to trust your tenant, saying, if your Azure Active Directory tenant says mark@contoso.com is a valid user, and mark@contoso.com comes across in a federation token signed by Azure Active Directory for your tenant, then Box will say, OK, I trust them. That's the user. Question? So the question was, with the password single sign-on, if users know their password and they are let go, they're no longer with the organization, what happens? Again, it's going to depend on how you've configured or whether you've configured user provisioning and deprovisioning. If you are not provisioning and deprovisioning users to that SaaS application, then when the user's account is disabled in Active Directory, obviously they can't see it on the access panel, but they still know the password, they can still go to the application. If you have deprovisioning and provisioning for Azure Active Directory, then when the user is disabled in Azure Active Directory, then Azure AD will go over to Box and say, and deprovision this user or disable the user, whatever the operation is in Box. So for that scenario, you would need to have provisioning or deprovisioning to that application. Otherwise, you're correct. The user, if they still know their password, would still be able to go into the app. OK, question?
How
do I map my existing accounts? So, great question. Here's the key thing to keep in mind. What do we use in Azure Active Directory is we use the user principal name as our common identifier. We looked at the SaaS apps, and here's the key thing to keep in mind when you're connecting Azure Active Directory and these SaaS applications is most of the SaaS apps out there, with a few exceptions, don't know about this magic thing we and the Kerberos community invented many years ago called the user principal name. Most SaaS applications out there have some other form of identifier. Now, on-prem, you know about domain slash account name or pairwise identifiers if you've been using SAML in the past. Most of the SaaS apps out there, like Box or Dropbox, the way they think about user identities are email addresses. So in order for you to be able to join the users in Azure Active Directory and your SaaS application, so that when you turn on provisioning, they won't reprovision the user another identity, you need to have that consistent mapping between the user principal name in Azure Active Directory, which is our identifier, and the identifier of the user in the SaaS application. So that's the key thing. If your users in Concur, let's say, didn't follow the same naming scheme as you use in Azure Active Directory, then Azure Active Directory, when you turn on provisioning, won't be able to find them. It'll go look, is mark@contoso.com in here? And Contoso says, no, we don't know mark@contoso.com because we're mark@contoso1.com. So we won't find the users, we won't be able to join them up. The other reason why this is important is there's a lot of constraints in these SaaS applications. And again, this is documented on the wiki. Let me highlight some of the key things here. In Azure Active Directory, names have to be unique. When you go to Azure Active Directory for the first time, you'll get basically an onmicrosoft.com domain. You can be, contoso12345.onmicrosoft.com. And then in order to really start using this, we will recommend you do domain validation. You'll say, what's the real domain my company uses? Contoso.com. So you do a DNS trick, and you now demonstrate to Azure AD or the other online services that you own contoso.com. So that then, from that point going forward, Azure Active Directory knows that mark@contoso.com and bob@contoso.com are part of your tenant. The same kind of naming uniqueness occurs in other SaaS applications as well. Unsurprisingly, it's a very common pattern. So you'll go to other SaaS applications and they may ask you to do domain validation. Google does that for some. Others have additional constraints. So a lot that we're going to be talking about, you know, Box, Dropbox, and Citrix, require that the identifier also be an email address. And not only do they require it to look like an email address, they're actually going to make a requirement that whatever is the identifier needs to have a recipient, the user, be able to receive emails sent to that. So if you're set up your Azure Active Directory with an onmicrosoft.com and you don't have Exchange Online, then you may not be able to successfully connect to some of these SaaS applications that we'll show in a moment, because they're going to say, great, you're bringing in users, we'll make sure these are email addresses. Oh dear, they're not. Now it's a problem. Now this is not new. This is exactly the same kind of consideration you would have had when you're onboarding to Exchange Online. If you were using local identifiers, if you were contoso.local beforehand for your on-premises AD environment, that wouldn't work as your user identity you send to Exchange Online, because Exchange Online requires a routable domain name. Now, if you've got a situation where you have users in your organization, those users are trained up with a UPN that they're very familiar with. They're like, I know contoso.local. I love contoso.local. I always want to be Mark at contoso.local. I don't want to use this.com. It's evil. That's fine, because we have a new update that went out last April, just a month ago, for ADFS that separates how users sign in to their local domain. You know, if you're using ADFS, how they sign into their AD can be a different attribute than what's sent to Azure AD. So if your users really love that local address for their on-premises environment, but you want to start doing the SaaS application integration, you want to connect to, you know, Exchange Online or Box or Citrix, and you need to have a routable domain name, then you should take a look at the ADFS April update, because it'll allow you to keep two different attributes, the attribute that the users log in as and the attribute that's your user principal name that's used for Azure AD and your SaaS apps. Question? So the question, so the question was, how traumatic are UPN changes when you're doing directory sync? Not too bad. I mean, we'll pick them up in Azure Active Directory when we detect a UPN change, and when you've got provisioning turned on, it will go out and make the corresponding change into the target SaaS application. So in general, it should work. But let me show you a case of something you do want to keep in mind for that. Let me just go through this, and I'll come back to your question again. I'm going to give you an example of where that can be a problem. But first, I want to address a few more key points about the SaaS integration in general before we go into that specific one. We in Azure Active Directory have defined the mapping. I'll show you what the mapping looks like for Salesforce in a moment, between the attributes in Azure AD and what gets sent to those SaaS apps. So we will send just enough attributes that are needed for user provisioning, for users to sign in. So if you had been reading through the DirSync documentation, it talked about these, you know, 180 different attributes that DirSync needs. You don't need all those attributes for SaaS management. Basically, we'll only send to the SaaS apps the minimum set that the SaaS apps need in order to create a user, you know, provision a user, and have that user sign in. So if the application, you know, Box or something, doesn't need the proxy address, we're not going to send proxy address or even, you know, make any use of it. Basically, it's UPN, a few other naming attributes. Conversely, if there's a SaaS application that needs an attribute that's not part of the Azure Active Directory schema, then, well, we basically hard-code it today. So I'll show you an example of that in a moment. Now, if you say, well, I don't like this, I want to have, you know, my own schema, you can do that for building your own attributes. So if you're building your own attribute and you want, or building your own application, you can have your own attributes. But for the applications that have already been integrated, we'll send the attributes that the application needs, and in some cases, we're going to supply a default value. If you don't like that value, you can go into the application itself and change it, however. Final thing, just to reiterate again, the UPNs need to match. So if you have an existing SaaS application, if you've already got Concur and you want to connect that up to Azure Active Directory, you need to make sure that the UPNs match, especially if you're going to be doing provisioning or federation, because otherwise, when we try to provision, we don't find the user, we'll provision them again effectively with the UPN that's known to Azure AD. And if you don't have provisioning, if you just have federation and the UPNs don't match, then when Azure Active Directory sends the federation token, which I'll show in a moment, over to the application will say, I can't find that user. I don't know who that is because the UPN doesn't match. The next key thing to keep in mind is authorization really is going on in the application itself. With Azure Active Directory, you can control whether or not there is an account for the user in a particular application. We can control whether to provision a user, whether it shows up on the access panel. For Salesforce, we go a little bit further. You can pick, when you're provisioning users into Salesforce, which Salesforce role effectively they should have. So if you say, I've got two categories of users. I've got my salespeople and everyone else. And I want my salespeople to have a Salesforce license when they get provisioned to Salesforce, and everyone else should be chatter-free, which is basically the lowest level of authorization rights in Salesforce.com. Then you can pick that when provisioning to Salesforce. This is because Salesforce exposes authorization as part of its user provisioning API. Most of the other SaaS applications don't do that. Box doesn't have authorization in its API, so we aren't able to do any authorization for provisioning to apps other than Salesforce. The other thing to keep in mind is SAML token issuance, or in the case of OpenID Connect. If you've authorized an application, say Box, for federation with your tenant in Azure Active Directory, then when a user requests a token, Azure Active Directory will build a token for that user. It's up to Box, or whatever your application is, to decide whether it wants that user to do anything once they have that token. But the token issuance is always going to occur if that application is configured on that list of applications for your tenant. Final thing to note, if you've used Azure Active Directory before with Azure and you were using a Microsoft account, the Microsoft accounts are not suitable for provisioning into the third-party SaaS, nor will they, unfortunately, work for federation. So what we've been talking about here for the provisioning and federation applies to the organizational accounts, the accounts you create in Azure itself or you sync in from DirSync or add through PowerShell, not the Microsoft accounts. Reason for that is Microsoft accounts are effectively foreign to your tenant. They're not really part of your organization. They have their own identity. And a Microsoft account could be part of many organizations. You may have seen this yourself. If you add multiple subscriptions in Azure and you have Microsoft accounts, someone with Microsoft account could be part of three or four subscriptions, which means they could be part of three or four directories. If we went and tried to provision them into, say, Salesforce, it would get confused because we wouldn't be able to say, well, here's a user and they belong to many organizations. These SaaS apps don't allow that. They say one identity, one UPN, one tenant. Was there a question over here? So the question was, if I've extended the Azure Active Directory schema and I'm using AD Sync, do my schema changes go back to on-premises Active Directory? No, they don't. So the schema extensions in Azure Active Directory are intended for an application that you're developing that wants to use Azure Active Directory as a way of storing some additional attributes about the user that that application itself will go back again and retrieve later. They won't go back to an on-premises environment because they're assumed that if the app is querying Azure AD, it's using Azure AD as its main repository. So we don't do sync back of that today. This is an interesting question, which is veering somewhat from my symposium topics of, can I make the Azure AD sync tool fault tolerant? Let's cover that after we finish the presentation, because we had another set of slides here on what do we do with the identities going from Azure AD out to the target applications. I think that's going to be a longer discussion of what do I do in order to make sure I get the right identities going into Azure AD. Okay, so now let's take a look at a couple of the key SaaS applications. So Salesforce.com. Some of you might have noticed this if you've been reading the wiki documentation about configuring single sign-on and provisioning. If you want to go and demonstrate this, you've got people saying, yeah, we're using Salesforce, and you want to start using Azure Active Directory, let's set up a test environment and try it out. Make sure if you're going to do a test environment of Salesforce, go get a developer edition test environment. don't go and get a Salesforce free trial. Apologies to anyone here from Salesforce. The reason for that is not because we like developer or not, but what we found when people try this out is the free trial of Salesforce is really intended that you just want to try Salesforce, which means they don't expose things like the API. So you try to provision to a free trial of Salesforce, and it doesn't respond. You try to federate, and we get no response. The token is rejected. And what we found out is not every Salesforce edition allows incoming federation or incoming provisioning. So if you're going to try it out just for a test, get a developer edition. Also, sandboxes. I know for many organizations, they'll have the production Salesforce, they'll also have a sandbox environment. Sandboxes are not going to be a good match for Azure AD if you want to try out provisioning or federation. And here's why. When you create a sandbox in Salesforce, they'll copy the users and the other Salesforce CRM objects into that sandbox. And because they have a name uniqueness requirement, they'll change all the names when they copy them in there. And when they copy the names in there, they change them, they add a suffix to it. So if your sandbox is test and your main tenant is contosa.com, then your sandbox, Salesforce sandbox user identity is, you know, admin@contosa.com/test. Not a valid UPN, probably not a valid domain name, so we won't be able to join up a user to that from Azure AD. So don't use a sandbox. If you want to do a trial, do a developer. Once your trial is done, once you're, you know, ready to do this, then any of the mainline, you know, enterprise or unlimited editions of Salesforce will work. Another thing to keep in mind, if you're a large organization, you know, a few tens or hundreds of thousands of users, you say, great, I'm going to start provisioning, and you turn on and say, I want to give everyone in my company Salesforce chatter. You'll probably run into a limitation, not ours, but Salesforce, because they put an API limit, a quota on there. So if you're starting provisioning, you think, wow, this provisioning is really, really slow. Microsoft, why are you so slow in provisioning? It may be that you're just running up against a Salesforce quota. So if you're a large-scale environment, you're doing that initial load, you're trying to provision, you know, tens of thousands of users, call up your Salesforce support person and say, hey, we're going to be doing a bulk load, you know, over the weekend or something. Turn off the quota so that we can send in, you know, hundreds of thousands of objects. Final thing to keep in mind with Salesforce is Salesforce have the notion that users live forever. Now, in our environment, we have a somewhat different notion. We have soft delete and hard delete. If you go to the Azure Management Portal and you delete someone, they disappear. That's soft delete. Sometime later, hard delete. The reason why we do that is, let's say you accidentally delete someone, but they have a mailbox, and you realize, I picked the wrong person. You can call support and say, picked the wrong person, undelete them, their mailbox is saved. So we do a similar thing. When we talk for provisioning to Salesforce, we will change the UPN of the user so they can't log in, but the user will stay around in Salesforce. We'll just disable their account and give them another UPN. So if you're trying this out with Salesforce and say, hey, why are these UPNs changing? That's just changing because we're doing a user soft delete in Azure Active Directory. There was a question before about the attributes in the schema. So this is just an example. You can take a look afterwards. This is how we map the schema in the Salesforce of the attributes coming from Azure Active Directory. Now we had a question, again, about what happens on a UPN change, like someone gets a new name. And I said, it's generally going to work. But let me give you an example of something that may be a problem you want to think about when this happens. So let's pick an example of an application Box. And Box is certainly not the only one who has this issue. When you are provisioning users into Box, Box, because it started from a consumer mindset and became more enterprise focused, still has some remnants of that in its back-end processing. And so for Box and others, provisioning is really treated like invitation. When we say as Azure, provision Mark into Box, Box interprets that as, the tenant admin would like to invite Mark into this tenant. Well, if you invite someone, you should send him a note. Would you like to come in? So when you're doing a UPN rename, this is where it's going to get interesting, because when you are renaming a user that has been provisioned into Box, Box is saying, someone appears to be changing another person's name. I better check with that person and make sure they're okay with that change by sending them an email. So that's going to be the sensitive thing with Box, Dropbox, and a few other apps. When you do a UPN change, you want to read up on how Box or Dropbox handles that and see where do they send that confirming email. Because if they send the email and you've already switched over say, Exchange Online or your mail system, it doesn't recognize the previous mailbox, then that mail gets lost, and the user's like, I can't log in the box anymore because the box is waiting for the user to confirm that their name is being changed. So these are the kinds of things to watch out for. ServiceNow, similar thing. For a lot of these SaaS applications, it's assumed that you're going to get their support or their consultants online during this migration process. So for things like Box or Google, it's pretty self-service for things like provisioning. I can go to Salesforce, I can set it up myself. If I want to go to Box and turn on Federation, I'll need to do a support call. And for other apps like Concur or ServiceNow, it may be a little bit more complicated. As much as possible, we're going to provide the documentation for what we need to have you do when you're doing this integration in TechNet on MSDN. There'll be a few cases here where there's additional documentation on the application side itself. So, for example, there's a really good troubleshooting guide on ServiceNow for troubleshooting the Federation. Now, I want to, in my last few minutes, jump back and show you an example of what to do when something goes wrong. So we've got here our access panel. We see our number of applications. We showed earlier clicking on Box, being federated, and signed in automatically into Box. Now let's say something's going wrong here. A couple places to look. First thing to look, over here on the Reports tab, we have one of our reports, account provisioning errors. So if there's a problem, if we're not able to provision a user into an application, it'll go to this report and it's been for a while, and eventually show you, you know, did it find any errors from provisioning? Now, another thing to look at is if you set up Federation and you're not able to get to this screen or whatever screen is in the application because something goes wrong, that can be a little bit more difficult to troubleshoot. I use tools. So I use Fiddler, but I mean, you can do a lot of the troubleshooting through, you know, just capturing the data in IE or using other kinds of network sniffers. The main thing you need to keep in mind for using a tool like Fiddler, you're trying to diagnose a federation problem, is you have to see inside the HTTP traffic. So if you're using Microsoft Network Monitor to try to get a trace for what's going on, it won't be very helpful for federation because it won't be able to see inside the protocol exchange. Using Fiddler on the user's machine, then you can turn on decrypt HTTPS traffic, and you'll be able to see inside of it. Or if you're using Internet Explorer or another browser to do the capture in the browser itself, then you'll be able to see what's going on in there. So let me show you what it looks like here when you sign in. So I pick an application, and I've already gone and pre-recorded a couple of sessions. So earlier, tried logging into Box. Now here's an example of the user starts at the application itself. So before we add the question, which ones do you support user logging in natively to the application versus going to the access panel? Box is one where the user can start here at the application itself, Box, and Box redirects back. You'll see here a number of Microsoft and Windows sites, and then gets back to, again, to Box. Another pattern is the user starting, The user starting at the access panel, which is account.active directory to windows.azure.com, and then redirecting to Box. So the key things to watch for if you're troubleshooting are any of these changes here where you're going from the SaaS app domain to a Microsoft or Windows domain and back again, because that's going to be where you see the SAML interaction occurring. So here, the main thing to look for is I'm going from the access panel over to Box. Box is then doing something and then going back to Azure Active Directory and then back to Box again. So the key thing to look at here, if you're ever trying to troubleshoot and see why this isn't working, is the first interaction with the SaaS application after you go back out of the Windows Azure environment right here. This is my first one going to Box. And we happen to see it's a post-operation. If we look inside of this, we'll see that there is SAML response. Now, there's a nice feature built into Fiddler called Text Wizard, where you can basically select the right value, take a look and it'll expand it for you. So if you say, you know, from Base64 code, or you can run an inflator, it'll show you what's inside that SAML token. And the key thing really to look for is down here at the end. You can see things like the attributes. Name is the important one. That's user principal name. So we can see here, if you look down for the name attribute, is we're sending admin at contosabuild.com. So if you're going and sending users over into the application, user says, I'm not able to sign in. It says it doesn't know who I am. Go to the user's machine, get Fiddler or a similar tool on there. Look at the packet that is the message being sent to the SaaS app from online. Open up the SAML response, undo Base64 encoding, and look for that name. Now, another thing that can go wrong is, let's clear all this out. Is a misconfiguration. So let me show you an example of misconfiguration. Here's one where I'm in Azure Active Directory, I'm going to Google, and not able to log in. I don't see anything useful going on here. So if we go and look inside that SAML response, we'll see something somewhat interesting. We'll see this. In some cases, Azure Active Directory is going to send a SAML response to the SaaS application that does not contain a set of attributes with names. It's going to contain an error message. And what does Google do when it gets an error message? Throws up. Nothing useful. It'll give you some generic error. So this is the next thing to watch out for. If there's a misconfiguration, if you've told Google the wrong tenant in Azure Active Directory, you know, maybe you're moving from like a test tenant in Azure AD to a production tenant, and you've got both wired up to the same Google tenant accidentally, then you're going to see a message like this one that comes back that says, error issuing the token. This is tricky to find because it looks like a normal protocol interaction. You know, you go to the access panel, you click on Google, it redirects, sends something over to Google, should all be working fine, except rather than sending a token, we're sending an error. So that's the thing to look for here is inside the message, you'll start to see something that looks very unfamiliar that has a SAML error message. And relying party with identifier Google not found probably means you're running in the wrong token, users are in the wrong tenant, users logged in from the wrong environment. And there's a number of other things you can look for here, but those are the main ones, looking for the pattern of what happens when the user tries to connect and fails. There's similar kinds of interaction. Look for the naming attribute. So the last thing I want to show then before we wrap up is where to go next. So if you want to learn more about how to go and actually configure this, we have a set of tutorials. And there's a really long website there, but you'll get the slides. And look for Box or Citrix. There's, for each one of these, a tutorial that walks through how you configure the integration between Azure Active Directory and each one of those SaaS applications. And if you say, well, I am building my own application, I want to do it all myself, we have the API documentations for that. Now, for late-breaking news, if something shows up, like there's a change to a certificate, you know, we have to change our cert for some reason, or we just found something, or there's a support issue, or there's an outage that affects these SaaS applications, we have a wiki page for that called AAD SaaS. And that wiki page is going to give you the latest updates to material that affects those SaaS integration. So if you're ever wondering, you know, why am I not getting what I expect, check out the wiki. There may be something that we want to give you as an update. If you have other questions, obviously you can reach out to us. You can call support. We also have an Azure Active Directory forum where you can talk about, you know, these SaaS integrations with other IT pros, with our partners, and with engineering directly. With that, I think we're near the end of the event, so you've probably gone to most of these sessions already. If not, go back and watch the recordings. And, of course, fill out your evaluations. I think we'll wrap up here, and then you can come get me if you have any questions after you finish up. Thank you very much.